Manifested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for staying with us. It's 29 minutes to 10 o'clock. On the line with us is Tere Tselane of the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa. And I told you that we're going to be discussing the distinctions between government of national unity versus coalitions. Lots of you have been asking the question, what are the differences and what are we talking about here? So this is really going to be one of those, right? So government of national unity 101 versus coalitions. We're not really going to delve into the coalition arrangements themselves as political parties are negotiating them. That will follow. We just want to make sure that you understand the differences. So, as I said, Tere Tselane on the line with us. Good evening and welcome, Mr. Tselane.
Good evening to you and to your listeners, and thank you very much for having me.
All right, so let's try and clarify it. A government of national unity, and then we can look at the distinction between that and coalition governments.
Okay. Government of national unity basically, as you may be aware, means you are trying to get all the interested parties, particularly those political parties that are represented in parliament, to be part of a government. And we have seen this happening in the previous arrangement in 1994 when the African National Congress, as a ruling party, invited the nationalists as well as the Inkatha Freedom Party to be part of that government. But at that time, it was really out of goodwill of the African National Congress. But at the moment, the necessity has arisen as a result of the fact that the African National Congress, as a party that has been in governance, has not been able to garner sufficient support to be able to form a government. And it is on the basis of that that it has actually taken a decision to try to invite all other political parties that are there to be part of this. So it is, at the end of the day, a voluntary association. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it will depend up to the African National Congress if it has sufficient support to be able to constitute a government to proceed on that basis, or whether it would still want to get even smaller political parties to be part of this. Mm-hmm. But ordinarily, if it has a sufficient support to be able to say that they can be able to constitute the government, they will proceed on that basis.
Okay. You've explained what necessitated this. What then is the difference between the government of national unity and a coalition arrangement?
Well, coalition is basically when you have one or two political parties based on the level of support that they've been able to get together in order to be able to constitute the government. So government of national unity basically is a lot more broader. Mm-hmm. Than a coalition arrangement. But in essence, it is still one and the same thing, that in order to be able to govern, you require sufficient support to be able to do that, except that with a government of national unity, you are trying to invite all political parties to come in, except in a coalition arrangement, you can choose whoever you want to basically go into coalition with. And then if you have got 50 plus one support, you can then proceed with that particular party without having to invite every party to be part of it.
Both of these, you mentioned, particularly with the government of national unity, that it's essentially goodwill, right? So you don't necessarily have to be inviting people who, I suppose, would have the necessary numbers. You can invite everybody. You made the example of the National Party and Inkatha Freedom Party. And I know that the Democratic Party back then rejected that offer. So it's goodwill. You ask people to come and join you, and that's that. But both of these arrangements, they are not binding, are they?
They're not?
They're not binding. Nobody has to stay if they don't want to stay.
They are not binding. And the reason why they're not binding, particularly now, is because there is no legal framework that governs the relationship. So any party can just really get out of it. I've characterized this previously as a fat and settled relationship. So in a fat and set relationship, when you're tired of a partner, you just, take your jacket or your skirt, and then you move out of the relationship. So it is the same thing with this current arrangement. You may be aware that for quite some time, actually, have been advocating for regulation of coalitions. In fact, in 2016, when I realized that there was a possibility that South Africa was moving in this direction, I started advocating for regulation of this so that it is a legally binding relationship. So I've seen somewhere where they are saying there is an attempt to try to lock parties into a legally binding arrangement for 5 years. The truth of the matter is that there can be a legally binding arrangement for as long as there is no legal framework that governs it. So even if you enter into a relationship with another party and say, we're not going to be doing the following things, but if I'm tired, I will leave without any consequence.
And one of the dangers here, as we've seen previously with the National Party, is that there is the risk of diluting your own identity of your own party in a government of national unity, which is why the National Party at some point decided this is not working for us.
Definitely. It's a process of taking leave where you decide as a party what are the kind of the things that you can stand and things that you cannot actually stand. And because it's not a legally binding arrangement, if you're not happy with whatever is happening, you can just pack and leave like the nationalists did I'm not too sure whether it was 95 or 96.
95.
When they decided they were no longer prepared to stick with policies that they did not agree with. So it is the same thing even now, that whatever arrangement is going to be made, if a party is not happy with the policies, the kind of the policies that are put in place, and they realize there is no possibility for them to influence them in any other way, they will pack and leave.
Yeah. Even if government is calling it the government of national unity, or whether this is coalition arrangements, there is a concern, to your point about your advocation of the regulations of these coalition, that we may find ourselves with what we are seeing in local government, where there's flip-flopping, there's trading, there's instability. Is that a real risk?
It is definitely a real risk because it's a voluntary association. Whichever way you are making it, there is no way that is going to be a legally binding arrangement, and therefore, you have the risk of a situation where you've got a president who has left the country. And then if the majority of the parties believe that they're going to have a motion of no confidence on that president, they will do so, and then the president will be told in Davos or wherever that, hey, you're no longer the president. There is a new one that has just been elected, because the majority of people in parliament have taken the decision to do so. So the uncertainty that and instability that you see at the local government level will persist until such time that you have some kind of a regulation that is legally binding.
Thank you so much for staying with us. We are discussing coalition arrangements. We're discussing government of national unity. You've asked for someone to clarify these differences, and here we are. Terry Tselane is on the line with us. He's from the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa. He is the chair there, and the lines are opened on 086-000-959. You can also send a voice note with your questions on 063-688-0959. Mr. Tselane, thanks again for staying with us. So as things stand, we are going to be taking a call from Bongani, who's got a question for you, Mr. Tselane. Bongani, thank you so much for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela, and good evening to your guest.
Good evening. Thanks for calling, Bongani. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's quite shocking and puzzling how the challenges based on the municipality governance are taking place, the way service delivery is delaying and stuff. But so in terms of the national unity, do you think it's going to work for people, especially the ordinary people of South Africa, because of these other parties will try to prove a point since they're now in part of the governance nationally and whatsoever, and the African National Congress will still have to stand with its own policies and stuff. So do you think it's going to work where everyone will agree without any struggle or without any hassle?
Mr. Tselane?
You know, I always say what you have in Joburg and Ekurhuleni and, you know, other cities, wherever you've got coalitions, it's not actually even a coalition. It's what I would call federalism, in a sense that you've got one entity called Joburg City, but at the same time, everybody that actually comes in there has got its own manifesto, and therefore they think they will implement their manifestos in the different functions that they have been given responsibility for. So if you are in housing, you think and you are party A, you are going to be implementing your own policies in that area. And another one that is in economic development things, we are going to be implementing our policies in this particular area. So you don't have really an organism that can operate that way, where there is no coordination and there is no common strategic vision and direction for the entity. And then that's why you've got paralysis in areas such as Johannesburg, because in my opinion, what we have in Johannesburg is basically a city that is on autopilot. It is functional to the extent that you've got people who have been appointed in various functional areas, and these people are doing what they've always been doing. Those who are supposed to be working in revenue, they are sending out,
statements and all.
Yes. Yeah, for people to pay, yes. You've got to pay,
yeah.
Because they've been doing it in any case, irrespective of who is actually in power.
Mm.
And then, you know, those who are doing roads, they're doing roads as they've been doing all along without any really direction. And we've got politicians who are jostling for various positions in the council, but council is just basically on autopilot. And unfortunately, that risk exists even at the national and provincial level, where you've got now no party that has got absolute majority, where parties may go in there and then want to implement their own framework. And unfortunately, because this government has got to be constituted within 14 days, there is no time to even agree on the key strategic direction for governance. You know, so that's where, you know, your major problem is going to be, that people are going to come in and they're going to get positions and they're going to agree on positions, but you'll find that there is no common strategic direction. Patriotic Alliance has already said, give us Home Affairs. We want to get rid of illegal immigrants, particularly from the African continent.
In other words, Mr. Zolani, what you're saying is that even if people may agree to marry for, as you said, positions and so on, what they're probably not doing because of time or whatever reasons, they're not discussing policy issues. They're not discussing matters where, for instance, that are difficult, that they differ on, rather than things that they actually agree on. So we've just been speaking about Gaza, for instance. We know that the DA and the ANC don't see eye to eye on that matter. And they're probably not discussing that now. They are probably discussing the relationship rather than the issues that they differ on.
Absolutely. That's where the problem is. You know, in the document that we have written on coalitions, we looked, Nkululeko in particular has written this document, which is a really comprehensive framework for coalitions, where he was looking at German experiences and in terms of Germany, where before they can agree even on positions, and the Germans, by the way, have been doing this since 1945. So they've got an experience that is much longer than many countries. But Nordic countries, all of them, have been doing this thing for as long as that. You know, so before they agree on this position things, they've got 6 months within which they will have committees that will look at various key strategic questions facing the country, like in the previous elections, after the previous elections, they had 22 committees. These committees would look at, for instance, the role of the central bank, energy, employment, economy, industrialization, and then all those would then be developed into a comprehensive government program for 5 years. And then by the time they come to positions, everybody is pulling in the same direction. You know that you've got a strategic framework within which you're going to be operating, and you can't have a situation where you've got a president who's going to be speaking this language and another one saying, no, we don't agree with that on foreign policy. And it's a deputy president from a different party saying, on the question of Middle East, we don't agree with you on this question. And then therefore, what the president was saying is basically misrepresenting the country on this particular question. So those dynamics are likely to play themselves out if there is no proper framework that will govern it. And then unfortunately, as I've indicated, there is not sufficient time to deal with that. You've got 14 days within which you've got to agree quickly. And you agree quickly, you find that the relationship is actually just superficial. It does not deal with key strategic issues and differences amongst the political parties that are part of the governance.
Because what's likely to happen right now is as they negotiate for the national coalition arrangement, they are simultaneously also negotiating for provincial arrangements. So what is probably going to happen nationally, whatever chaos that may erupt, will most definitely also affect what's happening provincially, because that was part of their barter deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you will find different permutations at the provincial level, but basically the problem is the same. So the permutation will be based on who has got more votes at the provincial level. So you may find that at the national level, you are trying to find, you are trying to avoid having a relationship with, and I'm just giving this as an example, economic freedom fighters. But you find that at the provincial level, the numbers are such that you can actually do, you cannot actually do anything without involving them. So you can't demonize them at the national level, whilst at the provincial level, you would still require them to be able to form a government. You know, so you will find all these permutations, and you've got to try to make sure that those relationships are still able to help you to form a stable government.
You know, for a long time, we've also known that what happens politically at a very high level trickles down to DGs and many key positions in government because of patronage and so on. I mean, how concerned should we be? You just gave the example of the fact that in local government, you may have a mechanized system which can still operate even as the political system is unstable. Should we not get concerned, though, because what we've seen previously is that key positions, for instance, state-owned entities, DGs, and I was saying, and the like, generally tend to be positions that are, I suppose, supported by political principles. In this case, how worried should we be if politics does not get stable? Should we worry about the governance of the country all the way down?
We've got to be worried. We've got to be concerned about that because the majority of times these are political appointments. When even within the same party, I mean, when the African National Congress has been in power, when a different minister comes in, changes the whole administration from the DDG, deputy DGs, all the HODs, you find that, you know, they bring their own people. You'd think that it's actually a completely different government that has actually taken over when it's actually the same party. So this has been happening for quite some time at all different levels, and therefore it is most likely going to be happening. There was an attempt recently when the deputy president, Paul Mashatile, convened a conference on coalitions. There was a subcommittee that was dealing with the issue of insulating administration from political influence. But unfortunately, there hasn't been much in terms of regulating even that particular arrangement. So at the moment, those who come into power will definitely still come with their own people, and they will remove those who have and bring people that believe that they share their opinions and views on key strategic questions, and they will therefore be at the high echelons of administration, that instability as well.
Let me just change gears a little bit, Mr. Tselane, and ask you about your concerns of what is happening with the MK party. We've seen over the past couple of days they've rejected the election results. They've now written to Parliament saying that Parliament should not convene. They will not be coming. What do you make of all of this, and how concerned should we be?
Well, I normally don't really talk about political parties in that sense because all of them, I mean, I work with them. However, Just at the hypothetical level, Parliament is constituted by, in terms of Section 46, they say between 350 to 400 members. But currently, it is not between 350 and 400. It is actually 400 members, because that decision was taken a long time ago to have a Parliament constituted by 400 members. So, 400 members have already been constituted in a sense that the IEC, there were elections, and then after the elections, 400 names have been submitted to the chief justice, and then those 400 names are the names that now have been submitted to Parliament, people who got to be sworn in. So You've got 400 names already with the Secretary of Parliament. And these are people who are supposed to be sworn in. And therefore, Parliament is properly constituted because you've got 400 names as per Section 46 of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if some members don't attend, of course, I mean, they're absent, and the absence does not actually nullify the Constitution of the National Assembly. It will continue as planned, and all other processes will proceed as planned. But, of course, it is within the rights of any political party to decide as to whether they want to attend or not to attend. If they boycott, it is within their rights to do so, but it will not nullify the authenticity of
the sitting of Parliament.
National Assembly sitting. Yeah.
Appreciate your time. Terizilane is from the Institute of Election Management Services in Africa, and he was just giving his perspective on the differences between coalition arrangements as well as government of national unity. I hope it was able to give us some sense of proper clarity on the two, because you did ask for those, and you've been asking for clarity on those. I hope that helped, and we continue to talk about these as the days near that main sitting that will be happening on Friday, as we heard from Parliament earlier on today. So we do appreciate your time this evening. This is it for me. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.